Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed, our unfiltered episode. Rabia here, and I'm here as always with my colleagues, Colin and Mithal. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, how are you?
I feel better now that I have like bright red lipstick on. People will see this in the show, socials, this focus on the lips. Mithal and I are both feeling a little discombobulated. The day's been a little hectic and crazy, but mostly for good reasons. I hope you two had a good week, but I've already passed on some great news today. That ties totally into the episode we just dropped on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'll get to that in a second, but I have a couple of updates I want to give you guys. First, I want to give you an update on Greg Lance, and it's not a case update. It's a personal update. You guys will remember the Greg Lance case. We covered it, I don't know, about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It's been a while now. And then it went on to be covered by the Sundance Channel in their series, It Can't Happen Here. Anyhow, I wanted to report that Greg has gotten married. Yes, I know, I'm so happy for him. He's gotten married to his longtime girlfriend and advocate, Jara. She also was in our series. You probably heard her voice in it. But also on top of that, Greg has become a grandfather. His daughter, Rebecca, had a little girl named Annie. And on the day he got married in prison was the day he also got to meet his granddaughter for the first time.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So his mom, Joyce, was sending me pictures this morning, and I was just very happy for him. Now, that happened. I got that news on the heels of some very other super exciting news, which is that the gentleman we talked about in this Monday's episode, Sonny Burton, who was the 75-year-old man scheduled for execution on the day this episode's going to drop, March 12th, his sentence was commuted, and he was granted clemency by Governor Ivey. And he is only the third person, apparently, in the state to have been granted clemency.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I don't even know, as of this recording, if the news outlets have covered it. I know, like, I was, like, one of the first people to get a call from one of the advocates who's been working on the case for a long time. So it's been a very happy day. And, you know, I mentioned that Sonny, Mr. Burton, is the third person to be given clemency from execution in the state. Rocky Myers was the second. And Rocky was obviously, you know, for folks who've been following our work, we did a whole season on Rocky a while ago. I just want to remind folks a little bit about, like, the facts of the case. And then there's been some news in this case that I wanted to discuss with you guys. And I'm especially curious to hear, Colin, your thoughts on, like, kind of the latest developments. So, Rocky was convicted. He's been in prison for 32 years now. He was convicted of and Rocky is a black man in the South, and he was convicted of killing an elderly white neighbor, Ludie Mae Tucker, back in 1991. He always maintained his innocence. There was never any physical evidence, no DNA, no murder weapon, no fingerprints. Key witnesses recanted statements. A lot happened, right? But anyhow, he was convicted and sentenced to death. But last year in 2025, his death sentence was commuted by Alabama Governor Kay Ivey. And this is what she said. She said, in the case of Ludie Mae Tucker's murder, I have enough questions about Mr. Myers' guilt that I cannot move forward with executing him. For example, no murder weapon was found, no DNA evidence or fingerprints or other physical evidence tied Mr. Myers to the scene of the crime. So his sentence was commuted from death to a life sentence, which he is currently serving. However, he maintains his innocence and he's continued to fight, you know, to be exonerated. The most recent filing in his case was last fall, right? His legal team filed something called a Rule 32 petition in the local county, which is basically a post-conviction petition based on an entirely new claim. And that is that they have gathered all this evidence. It took a long time and gathered all this evidence that his defense counsel, attorney John Mays, who was appointed to him, had long-standing ties to the Ku Klux Klan. Yes. Now, it was publicly known that Mays, who began practicing back like in the 70s, you know, he's a seasoned member of the bar. He had spent years actually representing the KKK and members of the KKK in criminal and civil matters. But when he was asked about like his ties, he would say, well, I have no ties. But this entire investigation, which was led by two investigators working with a legal team, collected so much evidence, including photographs of Mays, not just attending rallies and cross burnings, but speaking at them.
Wow.
like leading them.
Kidding.
And yeah, he was in fact once offered the title of Imperial Clownsel, not Council, but Clownsel, by the Grand Wizard Robert Shelton himself. But he says, "Well, I didn't take the title." Back in 77, John Mays, in fact, sued the FBI on behalf of the Klan. And he argued that law enforcement, that the FBI had violated the civil rights of Klan members. And he said at the time, not only blacks and Jews have civil rights, but the Klan does too. And he goes on to say something, well, this is what he says. "You hear a lot about the civil rights of the N-word, I'm not going to say it, and the civil rights of murderers and every kind of pervert known to humanity. But what about the civil rights of decent law-abiding white man?" So an investigator named Maureen Bankston, who works for the federal defenders down in that district, just began going through the archives. And, you know, she's a black woman, so I'm sure this held a lot of personal significance to her. And she said that, you know, for her, what really drove her to dig deep was the fact that, you know, Rocky Myers never really had a choice. You know, he had to accept this lawyer that was appointed to him. And Rocky Myers himself, when he was told about this, he was shocked. It had been hidden from him. Obviously, it was never disclosed by his counsel. But then he says, you know, he always wondered about the fact that his, you know, Mays would be really like just cozy with the prosecutors and seem just very like chatty. But, you know, and that it would make his own son really angry about it, like as he watched this happen through the trial. And I will say that, you know, I feel like I've seen defense counsel do that anyways, like in other cases too. And that's probably just a matter of being in the same bar. But there are just, I mean, John Mays was not just like tangentially related to people. I mean, like, look, if you grew up in the South at that time and you're a white person, likely you have neighbors, friends, family who have some ties to the Klan. It's just likely to happen. But he was just really very close to it. He was actually involved in it. He was a seminal. He was an actual member of it. So in 1981, a young black teenager, Michael Donald, was tortured and lynched. And it was at the time called the last lynching in America. It absolutely is not the last lynching in America. And then 5 months later, Mays shows up at a Klan rally in a cross burning in Tennessee, where he tells whites that they have to prepare for the oncoming race war. So imagine, just months after this young black teenager has been lynched, this is the message that Mays is going out in the community and giving. But then what happens is that Michael's mother, Beulah May Donald, sues the Klan, and Mays represents the Grand Wizard in a civil suit. He does lose the case, and the Klan was left bankrupt. It was a $7 million verdict, but this is how close he was. And then a few years later, he was appointed to represent Rocky. So, you know, as they went through Mays' trial files, they found handwritten notes that used the N-word. He was describing a potential juror as someone who hates the N-word. I'm assuming he was doing that thinking, okay, I'm going to strike, get this juror struck. But it's just the language that he's using, right? He also used degrading language about Rocky in front of the jury. He called him a crackhead and a criminal. But you know, I mean, right now, this Rule 32 petition is asking the county judge to vacate the conviction, arguing that Mays' racial animus left Myers with virtually no representation at all. And they state that the new evidence raises profound constitutional concerns about whether Myers received effective assistance of counsel. Now, what's happened since they filed was there was a deadline for the DA to respond to this back in August. Then they keep asking for continuations. They've been kicking the can down the road. They now have a deadline for this March 16th, which I think is this coming Monday. So when this episode drops, the following Monday is when the DA is supposed to respond to this.
A thoughtfully built wardrobe comes down to pieces that mix well and last. That's where Quince shines. Premium fabrics, considered design, and everyday essentials that feel effortless to wear and dependable, even as the seasons change. Quince has the everyday essentials I love with quality that lasts. lightweight cashmere sweaters, short-sleeve Mongolian cashmere polos, linen bottoms and shorts, tees in 100% Pima cotton, and European jersey linen. These are the versatile pieces that make a wardrobe actually work from season to season. Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middlemen. You're not paying for brand markup or fancy retail stores, just quality clothing. The cashmere is 100% Mongolian, the same stuff that luxury brands use. The Pima cotton is long staple, which means it stays soft and doesn't pill. The European jersey linen is breathable and lightweight. Everything is built to hold up to regular wear and still look good. Their clothing is all rated between 4.5 and 5 stars by thousands of people wearing it every day. And they only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. For me, the Quince 100% European linen drawstring beach shorts have become my go-to as the seasons change. They don't wrinkle like cheap linen does, and they work well with everything. And they didn't cost a fortune either. Stop overcomplicating your wardrobe. You don't need a closet full of options. You need a few pieces that actually work. Right now, go to quince.com/tourjustice for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and love it. And you will. Now available in Canada too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/tourjustice for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/tourjustice.
So that's like kind of like the new evidence about this. I can't remember all of our covers, but I don't think this is an angle that we knew about back then, Colin, right?
No, you mentioned him being cozy with the prosecutors, and I covered that. And there were a lot of issues with appellate counsel, and I covered that. I did not know this about the KKK, and to learn this was absolutely shocking, and I don't see how a court could find this was anything other than a conflict of interest that makes it impossible that this was competent representation and fair representation for Rocky.
It is an Alabama court, however. So I feel like while might not be able to imagine courts in other jurisdictions, I feel like, I mean, the response, look, the state has two choices. They can either say, okay, we're not going to oppose this, you know, vacate the conviction. Maybe they'll, I mean, they can't go back to trial after all these years. It's not going to happen. Maybe they'll offer something, an Alford plea or something. Or they can come back and say, well, just because he was, like, we accept that he's a member of the KKK, but it doesn't mean he was an ineffective attorney. Right? Like, I mean, like, they still have to show more than the fact that he was a member of this hate group to show that his actual defense of Rocky was insufficient, right? You're inadequate, right, Colin?
Well, they would have to establish that this is a conflict of interest that makes it impossible for him to render competent counsel, right? And I think the fact that he's such an active member of the KKK, representing an African-American man accused of the murder of a white woman, you can try to argue against it. And as you say, it's a court in Alabama, but that to me seems like something that is not resolvable.
But it would then open the door to maybe any other black, clients that Mays represented who also lost, right? In criminal court.
The question is how broad the ruling would be.
Okay.
It's a particular fact pattern, an African-American man accused of murdering a white woman, right?
Right.
I would imagine I could argue prejudice in other types of cases, but there's no sexual assault here. I guess that's the only ingredient that would escalate it even more to say that this is impossible. But this is sort of one of the paradigm cases where you would not want a racially biased person representing an African-American man.
Right. Colin, when you... Did you find that his counsel was inadequate? Like, did you find there were things that he clearly should have done and didn't do? Because I just don't remember the details.
The biggest thing for me, and this is where the main focus of my investigation was, you mentioned there's no physical evidence tying Rocky to the crime scene. The perpetrator had a relatively physical encounter with Ludie Mae Tucker, the victim. And also, this is dating the case, they also took a VCR from the wall with all the cords involved there.
Right.
And Rocky had bad eczema. And I was able to speak to German researchers who did this study that said a person with untreated eczema is 90% likely to leave behind a full DNA profile just by touching a glass plate for like 5 or 10 seconds.
Right.
And so their conclusion was there's no way that Rocky Myers did this without leaving the epithelial cells, the skin cells there. There wasn't anything like that done by defense counsel. And I think for me, that was kind of the crux of the case and the reason I took it on in the first place.
Mm, okay. The murder took place in 91. When was the trial? Was it shortly thereafter?
Shortly thereafter, yeah. There wasn't any type of delay. Yeah.
So, I would say DNA technology was not quite as evolved then either. This is the early 90s. I mean, we couldn't get much in 99 with the Nance case. But folks who want to, you should definitely check out the website they've created. It's Justice for Rocky Myers. It's the number 4, justiceforrockymyers.com. It has all the evidence. They've laid out an incredible timeline with photographic evidence, newspaper articles of John Mays, like being part of the KKK. And of course, you can also find ways to support Rocky on this. Well, I mean, we'll keep you updated. We're hoping, I guess, on Monday, next Monday, they should respond to this. And if they do oppose it, assume there'll be a hearing and then it's just going to go on. But it would look like a really bad PR. I mean, like, it just feels like it would just be really bad for them to do it. Like, maybe that's why they're like, we can't figure out how to handle this.
You need to be very delicate in your legal response.
Yeah.
To avoid a lot of pushback. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, that's my story, but I've just been on cloud 9 all day, thanks to Sonny Burton and of course Greg being grandparent. Yeah. All right. I'm going to pass the mic over to Colin. Colin, what do you have for us?
All right. My case involves pop star Britney Spears.
Oh, hey. Okay.
And so this was about a week ago on March 4th, just before 9 p.m. She's pulled over by California Highway Patrol in Westlake Village, which is in Los Angeles County. The dispatchers at 911 had received reports that her black BMW is being driven, quote, erratically at a high rate of speed, southbound on 101 freeway near Borchard Road exit in Newbury Park. And so her blood alcohol concentration is determined to be 0.06. And so if we break that down, BAC, or blood alcohol concentration, it measures the grams of alcohol per 100 milliliters in your blood. And if you go to the Cleveland Clinic, if you have a BAC of 0.05%, quote, you may feel uninhibited and have lowered alertness and impaired judgment. At 0.08%, you may have reduced muscle coordination, find it more difficult to detect danger, and have impaired judgment and reasoning. And at 0.10, you may have reduced reaction time, slurred speech, and slowed thinking. And so if we're sort of thinking this through, we all have different metabolism, but generally, online reports say Britney Spears is about 120 pounds. And if you're at 120 pounds and you're a woman, generally 3 beers in 2 hours, you'd have a BAC of
0.078. Mm, okay.
Legal limit in California is 0.08%. And so as noted, Britney Spears is 0.06%. And a lot of people listening probably think if I'm below the legal limit, right, I can't be convicted of DUI.
Mm.
Not true. You can be convicted of DUI if you have any amount of blood in your system,
alcohol,
based on erratic driving and or failing the field sobriety test. And so the articles on this case, and there's a lot of misinformation out there that's been corrected, but it appears she was given a field sobriety test, she failed, and that's the reason that she is arrested for DUI. And so what is the field sobriety test? We probably all have a general sense. Say the alphabet backwards, close your eyes, touch your nose.
Never
walk
been there,
in a straight
Colin.
Line.
Yeah. I wouldn't know.
Stand on one leg, etc. And so the reason I raise this is one of the biggest criminal law and public safety issues out there, right? Drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure many listeners have had their lives impacted one way or the other by drunk driving. And what I want to focus on is these field sobriety tests. This is yet another example of junk science. And look, drunk driving is a horrible thing. It's taken a lot of lives. I have some connection in my family. But the Court of Appeals of Georgia last year noted things like the one-leg stand test and the walk in a straight line and turn. They lack any scientific method.
Right.
And
yeah,
it's like a lie detector. It's a proxy. It's not detecting how well you can drive. Some people are more coordinated than others.
Right.
Some are able to do things like say the alphabet backwards, others are not. And so like what do we do with this? Because this is one of the, you know, most commonly charged crimes in the country. It's a huge public safety issue. And yet we're using these field sobriety test methods that courts are now finding they have no legitimate basis. And so that's kind of my question to the two of you is, do we just rely on BAC and say, like, that's it? And if we're not doing that,
right,
what do we use to determine if someone is DUI?
I mean, I would say if you made me say the alphabet backwards right now, I would fail. Yeah. So that's not a good, right, good test, personally. But I mean, I think in the same way that lie detector tests are not admissible, there's other evidence that you need to have. Like, yeah, they should come up with something a little bit more scientific and legitimate for testing in addition to the BAC. Because to your point, yeah, if I'm more coordinated and somebody else is not, that number is relative.
I always say that life comes down to choices. And when it comes to dog food, it always seemed like you had to make a choice. You could either have fresh and healthy, or you could have easy to store and serve, but never both. But you don't have to choose anymore, thanks to Sundays. Sundays was founded by a veterinarian and mom, Dr. Tori Waxman, who got tired of seeing so-called premium dog food full of fillers and synthetics. So she designed Sundays, air-dried, real food made in a human-grade kitchen, using the same ingredients and care that you use to cook for yourself and your family. Every bite of Sundays is clean and made from real meat, fruits, and veggies, with no kibble. That means no weird ingredients you can't pronounce and no fillers. Compared to kibble or other brands out there, Sundays invests 50 times more in its ingredients to ensure premium quality, because your dog deserves food that's made with care, not in the interest of cost-cutting. And the best? You can just scoop and serve. No freezer, no thawing or prep, no mess. Just nutrient-rich, clean food that fuels their happiest, healthiest days, so you get more to them to share together. For me, I know that whether I'm feeding a dog or feeding a human, I hold it to the same standard. It has to taste good, it has to be healthy, and it can't aggravate the allergies that so many of us share. Luckily, Sundays for Dogs ticks all three boxes. Make the switch to Sundays. Go right now to sundaysfordogs.com/justice50 and get 50% off your first order. Or you can use code justice50 at checkout. That's 50% off your first order at sundaysfordogs.com/justice50. sundaysfordogs.com/justice50 or use the code justice50 at checkout.
Look, I mean, I have tiny, weak ankles, so balance is an issue for me. And I've seen those, and I've taken those, like, those TikTok challenges or whatever, Instagram challenges, where it's like, okay, if you're 40, you should be able to raise one leg and stand for this long. And me and my kids, sometimes I can do it and sometimes I can't. And I'm perfectly sober every single time. But I will say this, I think that, I mean, to me, it's like junk science, for, you know, the crappy forensic evidence type of stuff that we throw out, bite mark type of stuff. But that person got pulled over because they're driving erratically. I feel like you already have that in the bag.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, this, none of the, all of this stuff is going to follow the fact that they've been pulled over for a reason. There should be dashboard cam. There should be like a, you know what I mean? Like a, whatever, the vest, yeah, whatever it's called, the vest cam. And then that on top of like the blood alcohol test or the breathalyzer or whatever, I'm like, that should be sufficient. I guess like my question is the argument against the, I feel like if you have those two and then they fail the field sobriety test, like, I mean, mm-hmm, so what? But I guess what I'm trying to understand is like what the real concern about it is. If the person has, are you saying, Colin, that if that like Britney Spears was below the legal limit,
right,
but impaired?
That's the argument by the state,
okay,
is that she was impaired nonetheless by the alcohol to the extent, okay, that her driving was unsafe.
And that should be enough to get her a DUI violation.
Well, I guess that's part of the question, Rabia, is there's reports of her driving erratically. She has 0.06, the limit is 0.08, and she fails the field sobriety test. And so you can imagine if this case goes to trial, the jury might think, well, she's below the legal limit. There are some reports of some drivers saying she's driving a bit erratically, nothing too specific. It's the field sobriety test that makes the difference in their minds.
Maybe, yes. Maybe we need a better field sobriety test. What could that even look like, I suppose?
Do we take them to the police station and they have like a virtual reality, like a video game simulator, and you're driving and they're seeing? I think I've seen some of those study where they actually have people who have a certain number of drinks and they like do a simulator. Do you do a simulator? But some people are just generally bad drivers. I mean, how do you
right.
solve for that?
Well, then maybe they should not be driving. Is how I solve for that.
No, that's true.
I mean, I just feel like it's one of those things where it's like kind of like the cumulative circumstances here, right? Maybe she's under the limit, but she doesn't have no alcohol in her system, right? Like, so it's almost like a 2 out of 3 boxes have been checked here at least. Which is that she was driving erratically and then she fails the field test. And then there happens to be a little bit of alcohol. I guess I'm not completely against it, but it's like, you know, if I get pulled over because I don't know what a police officer thinks that I am not driving quite within my lines, and then I fail a field sobriety test, but there's zero alcohol in my system. I mean, obviously, in a case like that, a reasonable officer is going to be like, I'm not going to charge you. You're not going to get like hit with it.
Yeah.
You know, so I.
And for listeners, if you don't know, you don't have to consent to a field sobriety test.
Oh, well, there you go.
If you don't consent to a breathalyzer, you can have your license taken away.
But I'm guessing if you're very drunk, you don't remember that.
Well, right. That's. But yeah, I mean, if you're pulled over, you do not have to consent to that test if you have weak ankles or you're worried about, can I do ZYX, et cetera, you know?
Yeah.
On the top of my head.
I mean, I have obviously seen people drunk, right? Like in different kind of public spaces and stuff. And it feels pretty obvious. But I guess the question is, I mean, like, I don't know. I just feel like it's like one more kind of safeguard. Like it's, I don't know, for an officer, kind of like a CYA.
I mean, I think there should definitely be multiple kind of indicators, not just one. Right. Yeah. So the BAC shouldn't be the only one unless you're over the limit, then it's easy.
Automatically. Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, you would think that they would try to, send a poll out to doctors or scientists to say, like, what kind of stuff should we do as things evolve?
Mm-hmm. I think it's sufficient that people are getting pulled over for a reason, right? They're already, the officer's like, there's something going on. This person seems impaired. They're not driving. They're driving erratically for whatever reason, or they're a danger to others around them. So you already have that, you know, and then you've got the breath thing. I don't know.
Well, I've seen, you know, I don't know if you've seen this online. I think it was actually like WNBA players, like the combine or something. They would have kind of like this pole type thing with things that would drop from it. And they were seeing if they could catch it when it dropped. Like that at least would measure reaction time, which I think is kind of the critical thing we're looking at.
Yeah.
But again, some people are still uncoordinated generally.
Right. And my depth of vision is bad. Yeah. Like, I'm at that point in my life where it's like, I probably need readers, but I'm not wearing them. So things can be a little hazy sometimes, right? So I might not catch something because I'm not calculating how far away it actually... Yeah, I don't know. There's got to be... I mean, the alphabet backwards is hard, but if somebody can't obviously remember where they live, you know, things like that, those are clear signs. I don't know. What happened with Brittany, though? So she got charged with a DUI?
Yeah, she is arrested. She's charged with DUI. As I said, and this is one of those things that I think is so important in these high profile cases, it was initially reported by TMZ she led police on a 1 hour chase.
Oh.
That was not true. It was initially reported she had drugs in her vehicle. It turned out to be Adderall because she has ADHD. Just a lot of misreporting. But yeah, she was arrested. Yeah. She was charged. I don't know if she's going to plead or if charges will be dropped or what's going to go on.
And let me add, a person's baseline is also important. Mm-hmm. There are people I know who are perfectly sober, but very erratic. Which might apply in this
case. And that's, of course, a critical question with Britney Spears, right? Her whole conservatorship with her father, and there's the questions back and forth, which I don't know enough to wade into, but, you know, people have different takes on that, and so that's a big question with her.
Well, I think we can all rest easy that Britney will have a good representation, the best
she
can, money can buy. That shouldn't be an issue. All right. Interesting questions. I'd love to hear from listeners to see what you guys think about this. And can you think of alternatives that would make sense in a situation like this? Better alternatives than walking a line or catching something in midair. All right, Mithal, what do you got for us?
I meant to give a quick update on Nancy Guthrie. Since we're going into week 6, not anything groundbreaking. But if you remember, I talked about like a few gloves that were found near her house. Yeah. There was an additional glove that was found that they tested, and they were able to identify and kind of track that back to a nearby restaurant employee.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of glove? Are we talking about winter gloves? Or are they like the food service gloves?
Yeah.
I
think it was a food service type
latex
glove.
Latex gloves, okay.
They just said like it was a – well, actually, I take that back. They said it looked similar to that of the suspect, you know, when they released the photos and video. It looked like that. I don't actually recall them specifying the texture or material. But anyways, that employee was ruled out. So still no idea. And the private lab that's testing the DNA that was found, we still don't have results from that. And no additional information about the car or cars that, you know, they said were driving around the morning that she was kidnapped. So yeah, still no clue where she is or who has her and how she is.
6 weeks is a long time.
Yeah, but Savannah's back. She came back to the Today Show, so she's back at work.
Has the family said anything more recently?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Any more like, I'm sure they are getting lots of tips in response to their
But still nothing substantial. I mean, I think really it sounds like the biggest thing that they're waiting on is the DNA test results, like the forensic, genealogy from the private lab. But aside from that, unless somebody tells on their brother, uncle, cousin, ex, like, I don't know.
It's you know, I would love to hear from, actually, I'm going to ask Sarah Kalin what she thinks about, like, somebody who does, like, some criminal profiling. Like, what could be the motive behind something like this? If there isn't a ransom being asked up, like, why would they take this elderly lady? It's so baffling.
Right. Unless, like, maybe it was originally going to be a ransom, and maybe because of her medication, like, she may have died, and now they're like, oh crap, like, what the hell do we do?
We can't do anything.
So maybe it changed, you know, like, who knows?
That's awful. Thanks for the update. What do you have for us? You got something new?
I do. I have a case out of Utah. The Corey Richens case. Have you guys been following that?
No.
A bit, yeah.
It's
crazy.
It is crazy. So I'm going to take it back to the beginning. There's a couple, Eric and Corey Richens. They live, like I said, in Utah, just outside of Park City. They've got three young boys. Eric is a stonemasonry. He's got a business. And Corey flips houses. So, you know, they're pretty affluent. March 4th, early morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, Corey makes a 911 call to report that her husband wasn't breathing, hysterically crying, you know, asked for the ambulance to come out. EMTs come out immediately. They try to revive him. Unfortunately, by 5 o'clock in the morning, he's pronounced dead. 3 days later, Corey allegedly assaults Eric's sister after an agreement about what's going to happen to their home. At that same time, she finds out that Eric placed their home in a trust, and another one of his sisters was the trustee. So clearly, they were having some marital problems. Both of them had, you know, previously in between 2020 and 2021, had individually seen the lawyers, but they decided to reconcile, go to couples therapy and things like that. So they were still together. So, but she wasn't aware that Eric had, you know,
done this with the house,
put their home in the trust. Yeah. So a month after he passes away, the police inform Corey that he actually died not because he couldn't breathe, but because of a fentanyl overdose. And then a year later, in March of 2023, Corey publishes a children's book about grief to help her sons cope with the death of their father. She goes, you know, all over to promote her book, and, you know, she's obviously a grieving widow and is just trying to do something to help her children kind of deal with this grief. But then in May of 2023, she's charged with aggravated murder, attempted aggravated murder, insurance fraud, forgery, all these things in the death of her husband. And she pleads not guilty. Now, currently the trial is going on. I want to say it started in I think it's been a few weeks or 2 weeks, actually. It's been 2 weeks. The prosecutors are alleging that, you know, sure, they had a rough marriage, but she was having an affair on the side and was in millions of dollars in debt because apparently she doesn't flip houses well, I guess.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so they're alleging that that's what led her to poison her husband. She took out a insurance policy on him just a couple of weeks before he actually died for $2 million, which also happens to be how much debt she's in. And apparently a month before he actually died on Valentine's Day, she laced his sandwich and he only got sick but didn't pass away. So, you know, they're showing a pattern where she's actually trying to get rid of him and kind of start a new life.
She's really bad at this, though.
Yeah. Whereas the defense is arguing that she's been wrongfully blamed. Like, sure, he died. Maybe there was a fentanyl overdose, but he had issues popping pills. And so he may have done it to himself. So they cannot prove that she's the one who actually did the killing, right? She's the one who actually overdosed him. So that's kind of what's going on right now. I mean, there's tons that shows that she could be guilty. She's pleaded not guilty. But, you know, they've got internet searches of her, you know, what's the dosage if you want somebody that if you want to give somebody fentanyl.
Does she not watch true crime documentaries or listen to podcasts? Are you kidding me?
She must be watching The Real Housewives of Utah. Like, I guess not. So.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like dead to rights. What do you think, Colin?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I've been following the case a little bit. It seems like the defense, their strongest position is this drug dealer. I think initially told authorities that he had sold her fentanyl. And then last year made a statement to investigators that it was a different drug that he had sold her. So that's kind of the leg they're trying to stand on. I haven't followed closely enough to be able to say whether the defense has a real shot here. As Methil just noted, we just went through, there were these internet searches that don't seem to be too helpful to her. On the other hand, I've worked the Pam Lanier case and the Caitlin Conley case, both of which involve women who are accused of poisoning. Yeah. Pam is clearly innocent. Caitlin, there's strong evidence for innocence. So I'm not going to jump to judgment that she's guilty.
But also, Pam was not Googling arsenic levels.
That's
lethal
true.
Arsenic
I don't think she was Googling anything at that point in time. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like there's pretty strong evidence on both sides. And I'll be interested to see what the ultimate verdict is. I haven't followed closely enough to be able to have a strong opinion.
Yeah, I mean, she was searching about, like, women's prisons in Utah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't even know what form fentanyl comes in. Is it like a pill that could be crushed? Like, would you even give it to somebody without them knowing you're giving it to him? Is it like, how is it administered? Does anybody know?
You're the wrong crowd here.
I know. Yeah. We need to dial a friend on this one.
But I think, like, so when she put it in his sandwich, I don't think it was like, I don't think he tasted anything. I think he just got really sick from it. And so that's when he was like, I think either called or texted one of his good friends saying, I think she's trying to kill me. Like, I'm really sick. And he knew about the affair. Yeah. She also alleges that he was having an affair. And so that's kind of, there was a lot going on there between the two of them.
Well, yeah. So is this being covered like on court TV or like, is it being televised, the trial? Is it public?
I do not know.
You don't know? Okay.
There's a lot of like, they're called like court tubers.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're
covering it.
You know, they watch along on, that's kind of what I see on X or Twitter.
I follow Lawyer Lee.
So I'm assuming they're watching it in a stream.
Yeah, there's some YouTube videos.
Yeah. Do we know, Methil, do we know whether they're going to try to like read the book into evidence and use that in some way at the trial? The children's book that she wrote?
I you know what? I don't know. They're definitely like saying like that's sus, right? Like, you're writing about this, but you're the one who killed him. But I don't know if that's come into evidence or not.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a bold move. It's a bold move to be like, I'm now going to write this children's book.
Do we know if she's going to testify in her defense?
I haven't heard anything or read anything about that. No,
that'll be on my CTV. That's
I actually have a correction. I remember when we were talking about the Colin Gray case. So he actually didn't testify. I think when I was talking about it, I updated saying that he may have. He did not. Or I said he did not, but he did. He did testify.
He did testify.
Yeah. So I meant to make that correction before, too.
I feel like it would be a terrible idea for her to testify. Uh-huh. I would not want to put that client up on the stand and open up all those Pandora's boxes.
Exactly.
Well, I see I'm just looking at the most recent update. It says, in a letter allegedly written by Richen, she instructs her mother to tell her brother how to testify to defense attorneys. It's interesting.
She's not good at this.
She's not good at this. She's just leaving, not even breadcrumbs, just entire loaves of bread for the state to follow.
Seriously.
Follow me all the way to prison.
I know that her, you know, the man that she was having an affair with, he testified. And so he was saying, I loved her. Like, we were making plans for the future and all that kind of stuff. But then after he found out about, you know, the fentanyl and all that with her, he was like, I don't know, because she was talking weird after he died. And I don't see a future with her anymore.
Really?
He's questionable. It's like,
yeah. Well, in all of this, my heart breaks for the children.
Right.
Obviously they're going to end up probably likely losing both of their parents in different ways. But that children's book is crazy that she actually did that. This is going to be a Lifetime movie at some point. I'm sure of it.
Of course.
Yeah. Because of that weird twist. All right. I guess that's it for us this week.
I just wanted to tell our listeners, you know, we always tell them on the front end, these two cases out of Alabama, contact Governor Ivey to let her know we want you to commute it. So what I would say is to our listeners, especially those in Alabama, to reach out to Governor Ivey and to thank her and show your appreciation, because in the back end, I think it's important to set that precedent that, look, if you act on what we ask you to do, we're going to be thankful and not just stay silent. So listeners, by all means, I would say to reach out to her office and thank her.
Thank you for that reminder. It had occurred to me earlier, but I slipped my mind. That's really important to do. And maybe we can also post on our Facebook group again for folks to do that. I wanted to say one thing before we stop today's episode, and it's not related to like any stories, but it's just I want to emphasize the fact that, you know, our sponsors that we get make this show possible. And I want to explain something to our listeners about how it all works, because a lot of people don't understand how advertising dollars work in podcasting. You do not get paid if the ads reach a lot of ears. You get paid if there's conversions. So it's really important if for our listeners and for audiences who listen to podcasts, if they want that podcast to continue. And believe me, Colin and I are careful about the sponsors that we agree to. We say no to some sponsors. The ones that we agree to, and we do their live reads and stuff, like, you know, these are products that we really believe in and companies that we like. So what I would urge is that, you know, if you have a need for any of these products, like, you know, make sure to use our codes, make sure to share them with other people. That is what's going to keep our show going. And we need it to keep going, because that's how we do the work for folks like Rocky Myers and so many other defendants that we work for. All right. I know I never brought that up before, but I felt like I just really wanted to emphasize that, so folks understand how the whole system works. Conversions means our listeners hear the ads, they use the codes, and then the sponsor knows that our listeners are like supporting us that way.
That's right.
Are you happy with me, Methil, executive producer, for plugging that?
Good job.
All right. Thank you, guys. You guys have a great week, and we will be back in 7 days with more news.
Take care.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners. Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions, because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered 1 or 2. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with 3 different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being $1, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, onto the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Romero Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, You can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.